You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
I'm Brad Jackson.
So what are we smoking this week, Brad?
This week we've got the H. Upman, A.J. Fernandez. Which just sounds confusing that the cigar is called the A.J. Fernandez.
Yeah, you know, A.J.'s doing another collaboration here with H. Upman, and I guess they decided just to, for simplicity's sake, put his name on the cigar.
That sounds about right. But this is going to sport a Ecuadorian Sumatra wrapper with Corojo 99 binder, Carrillo 98, and Paluto Cabano fillers.
Yeah, it's going to be a medium to full-bodied with a sweet balanced taste profile. Or at least that's what they say on the internet.
I read it on the internet. It's got to be true. But I've liked probably the cigar that I've smoked the most from H. Upman has been the Banker, and I've always been a big fan of that cigar. The A.J. Fernandez here is coming in at a close second for me.
I prefer the Baker and the Candlestick Maker.
Well, this would be the Banker, not the Baker.
I said in the Banker, the Baker, and the Candlestick Maker. They should make those cigars.
Gosh. That would be great for like a holiday release or something, you know?
Yeah. Oh.
Man, we are marketing geniuses. Just gave some cigar manufacturer like $1 million idea. They're going to listen and be like, man, these guys are onto something.
And speaking of holiday releases, this is our annual Halloween episode. We're like deep horror fans and love like some gruesome shit and something that'll scare the pants off you. But some people, like people who need to smoke a milder cigar, some people can't handle like the old ultra violence and need something a little bit lighter with their scares. So this year we're going to talk about a few suggested horror comedies. If you can't go full blood and guts, throw a couple jokes in there just to lighten the mood.
Yeah. So as you're running for your life, don't forget calling the Strike Force.
StrikeForceEnergy.com. Use your promo code Cigar Nerds for 20% off your order. That will give you all the energy you need to run from murderous high school quarterbacks or whatever thing is chasing you this Halloween.
Or maybe just that additional jolt as you trip over and, sprain your ankle or something to actually get up and get away from your assailant.
Or if you're a parent having to deal with sugar jacked up kids, it'll give you that extra, energy to keep up with them after they've ate, a bag and a half of candy. Like grocery bag of candy.
Another reason people have kids. It's like, you always, can go trick-or-treating without the shame.
I had a friend who had a pet ferret, and it would steal candy from the Halloween bag. Once saw it run through the house with a candy cigarette in its mouth. It was the funniest thing I'd ever seen.
Ferrets and desk weasels are, the rambunctious. So I don't have to really worry about that. I keep reptiles, so, they're not really going to steal much of anything.
Except your crickets.
Yeah, but, I don't mind.
All right, and with that, we'll be back with This Halloween. Time to carve some pumpkins and hunt some ghosts and deal with the things that go bump in the night. And then make fun of them because this is the comedy horror episode.
Yeah. There's absolutely nothing scary about this episode. That's the, I guess that's the scariest part ever.
Oh, yeah. So as we said in the intro, there's, you know, there's comedy versions of everything, and horror has not escaped being made fun of. Because, I mean, it's such an easy genre to make fun of because there's so many tropes, as we've discussed in other like horror movie episodes, that seem to like be included in every horror movie. So there's definitely, I mean, jokes to be made
outside of, you know, real life serial killers and events. The rest of it is just a crock of shit. I mean, it's almost like, yeah, you know, things that, you know, parents say to their metalhead children, and you know, the very first one is, "Why do you worship Satan?" Like, no, it's just a trope of shit. That's all it is.
Oh, that's like, yeah, like I said,
it's
like
not being able to take yourself so seriously.
You got your Jasons and your Michael Myers that only walk after people, and somehow the dumb college students like trip, fall, and end up getting caught.
I mean, it's topless, you yeah. know, like magically, you know, you slip and fall, and you know, the shirt comes completely off, and you wind up dead. Or, I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, it could be just a great way to, you know, understand the Ten Commandments, you know? I mean, you put that darker feel to it, and all of a sudden, thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not, you know, adulterize. Thou shalt not, you know, whatever the fuck else, you know? Just don't do it. If you think it might be bad, don't do it. Otherwise, you're going to get axed.
Yeah, so we've come up
in a wood chipper.
We've come up with a list of our suggestions to watch this holiday season. And maybe we'll throw some honorable mentions in at the end of the show. But we got, you know, we got a new horror comedy. We got a couple classics. We got a foreign film, you know, and we've got like a nice indie film too. So we've, you know, we've mixed the pot well. So let's start with our foreign entry, Deathgasm.
What exactly is a Deathgasm? I mean, that's something that, you know, this film does not explain, and I was really disappointed in that. Like, you know, I was, you know, without reading anything about the film or anything else, I'm like, all right, you know, here it is. A group of people go on a wild sexcapade, and every time somebody orgasms, they end up dead.
Yeah, that could definitely have gone a whole other way, yes. 2015's Deathgasm, directed by Jason Lee Howden, is a New Zealand horror comedy film. Starring a bunch of people we've never heard of, but it's one thing you've seen. There's a meme. It's been floating around Facebook for a while now of a guy in like full death metal makeup.
Get it right, dude. It's black metal.
Sorry, black metal makeup, eating an ice cream cone with a pretty looking blonde chick on
it. But does he gent? And all the guitar players that, you know, I know of any metal subgenres or 300 subgenres of metal are like, holy shit, he just said gent.
But yes, that meme apparently comes from this movie. it's about a kid, Brody, who his mom gets put in an insane asylum for trying to have sex with a Santa Claus in a mall while she was high on meth. So he's forced to go move to this small town and live with his super religious aunt and uncle, and he's like the only metalhead in town. And
but apparently not, because there's a record store. And where there's record stores, there will be other metalheads, because it is an unspoken language.
Where he meets Zach, and he also meets the two school nerds who get picked on as much as him, you know, one's a D&D guy, and like, well, they're both D&D guys, but then you got the nerd guy, and then you got the fat drummer guy.
Isn't it awesome how like nerd culture and like metal like go hand in hand? Like, usually it's the exact opposite. Usually you go from like nerd to metal, but you know, I mean, as we've seen in like Knights of Badassdom and stuff, sometimes you just go, you know, metal to nerd. I mean, you know, it's very much, you know, you're playing in a world of fantasy either way. So, I mean,
yeah, and I've seen a lot of like hardcore metal guys at like Dragon Con and everything. You know, hell, you see guys that are like, you know, on stage doing like the screamest, darkest thing, and then you're like, yeah, dude, we play like D&D like in video games and shit. We're into comic books. It's, I don't know, it's a weird connection in
You know what it is, genres. Man? It's art, bro.
But yeah, they as they're trying to come up with decide to put together a band. There's like the whole montage of them coming up with ridiculous metal band names, which yeah, the darker the metal, the more ridiculous the name tends to be when you're looking at some stuff.
But I mean, once again, I think that's, you know, such a cool aspect that you just can't really take it that seriously. So how over the top can you make this? Like, to me, metal and all of its subgenres are like the biggest troll in the world. Like, it's fucking amazing.
And I did like when they're coming up with the names, the camera is like switching back and forth between the band members as they're suggesting the names. And like the lead singer, Zach, is like, yeah, Deathgasm, that should be it. And it goes back to the other guy, or we could do, and he's like, literally breaks the fourth wall, grabs the camera and pulls it back, and like, no, it's fucking Deathgasm. The decision's bad.
I mean, you know, a little bit of a tangent here. You know, Metalocalypse did a really awesome job of, you know, basically giving you all the behind the scenes of metal culture. And, you know, any band dynamic, like, I guess that's one of the reasons as a guitarist and as a fan of metal and everything else, like, Deathgasm is great because it's always the arrogant, cocky-ass vocalist that would do that and be like, no, it's my idea, therefore it's, you know, forever shot, you know, etched in stone, so.
Yeah, and, yeah, they decide to, you know, break into a house, and they find this guy, and I don't even remember the name of the band, but it's supposed to be some legendary metal band that kind of broke up and disappeared, and the lead singer supposedly went crazy and was hiding out in the middle of nowhere.
It's Dio.
And they find him, his name was Ricky Daggers, they find him like hiding in this house holding this this legendary album that supposedly only 666 copies are made. And they're like, you're part of the cult. I told you, I'm not letting you have it. And he's like, nah, dude, we're just fans. Yeah. And like, you know, but then cultists show up and kill the guy. And he gives them the album to, you know, hide for your life. So they go home to listen to it and find out there's a freaking Rick Astley record in it. So like they get Rickrolled right off the bat.
Yes.
But then they find these like old, like really old sheet music. And they're like, we should use this for a Deathgasm song. Turns out it's a black hymn that's supposed to summon the blind demon who will kill everybody. So,
yeah. I mean, it's basically like, you know, if you were to take the Necronomicon and, you know, convert it to black metal, like.
That's very much, like I said, you know, Evil Dead, they accidentally read from the Necronomicon, summon demons. This one, they accidentally planned a band song and turned the entire town into,
well, I mean,
you know, demons.
You can't really say accidentally because, I mean, he did spend quite a bit of time, you know, translating this thing. And
yeah,
because
he's bullied and the girl he's been trying to get is not doctors. He's like, hey, this actually says it gives me power, but we got to play this.
Well, no, see, you know, the other thing about band dynamics is he gets the girl, but it's the asshole lead vocalist that doesn't pass along the note and decides to take said girl to him, you know, cocky ass self.
Yes. And I love that because, like, there's one part earlier in the movie where Brody is, like, trying to explain to the, because he's also kind of a narrator of this story, the audience how metal makes you feel. And when you listen to it, you see him on this, as a, like a Viking warrior on the top of this mountain with, like, a hot, you know, slut around his leg and stuff, and him, like, just rocking out. And when he meets this very vanilla, typical blonde cheerleader girl, you know, and he's trying to explain to her metal, and he's like, well, here's like, a CD. And then you see her later, like, listen to all her music, and she's like, all right, well, I'm going to try this. And as soon as she listens to it, she's like, oh, and then she's on the mountain with, like, with the girls and a big axe and shit. It's
nice throwback to Man of War.
Yeah. Oh. But yeah, of course, they play the song. They summon Deadites, pretty much. And hilarity ensues because, you know, now the town is full of zombies and are, you know, blind demons. And Deadites. They have to, you know, find the music, reunite the band, and try to play the hymn backwards to stop the demon. But of course, yeah, they fuck it up. The demon comes anyway.
I mean, they fucked it up trying to get to the song, you know, initially. I guess it's even harder. Like, I think, you know, for myself, I'm like, shit, now I got to play this thing backwards.
Yeah.
I had to tune down to play the song. Now I've got to tune up? What?
That's
not a thing in metal.
But I like it. The demon does take over, you know, Zach, the lead singer, and he cannot for the life of him play the song backward to stop the spell. So he finally just like, fuck it, and just starts ripping like, you know, like a metal riff straight from the heart. And it's so badass that it's able to like bring Zach's humanity back for a minute. And he's like, I've got the demon under control. You're going to have to kill me, bro, so I can take him back to hell. Which was pretty fucking metal.
I just hear, you know, Nathan Explosion in the background. Brutal.
But yeah, the comedy elements of this movie, though, I mean, there's so many little jokes if you're yeah, into metal culture. Like one where he's trying to explain to the girls, like, isn't like all those metal bands just a bunch of screaming and like you know, death? He's like, oh no, just only one, unless you're talking about this or this or this. It names like 30 different subgenres, but everything else is a lot lighter.
All the way till you get to baby metal.
Baby metal. Oh, freaking! Oh. Is that the one with like the little Korean or Chinese girls?
Yes,
that's what I thought.
It's a real thing. Like, I mean, there. I think I looked it up. I mean, there are close to like 300 subgenres of metal out there. I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, if you could think about, you know, the biggest vast divide of anything, it's got to be metal. Like, because you can't just say metal, because then, you know, there'll be some politically correct egotistical asshole that'll correct you and be like, no, this is grindcore.
And the one guy tries to play some dubstep and they like smack him. But then, like, yeah, this movie also has an epic dildo fight scene. You've ever wondered if you can use dildos as a weapons, yes, you can.
I mean, you know, it seems like a viable option, too. I've heard of, you know, hardcore religious fanatics, you know, being into some kinky shit.
Yeah, so they go back to his house, and of course his aunt and uncle have been turned to monsters, and they're attacking them, so they're holed up in their bedroom, like, does he have any weapons? I don't know. He's like, well, here, I found this box that's church stuff. Maybe we can at least find a crucifix. And it's, like, full of, like, giant dildos. And then they come out, like, working them like nunchucks and fighting the monsters. And then later on, they build, like, we're going to need better weapons. So he builds, like a freaking weed eater with, like, a barbed wire or something on the end of it. And they find one dude who's, like, zombified and naked. And he just, like, ends up chopping his Dugan off. And he's like, you're really good at whacking dudes off. I mean, it's just so freaking ridiculous.
I mean, yeah, it is definitely over the top. It's enjoyable for mindless, you know, humor, especially, you know, I don't know. I mean, this is up there, you know, almost with like Pick a Destiny for me. I mean, you know, it's such an epic, you know.
Yes, Pick a Destiny. Oh. But yeah, and then, you know, once, then I like, you know, because every horror movie has to have like, you know, the killer's not really dead or some kind of like tag at the end of the credits, you know, and he's like, you know, they've saved the day, you know, all the demons are gone, and all of a sudden, you know, the lights start flickering and he gets like, you know, demon voices start coming through his stereo and he's like, oh no, it's back. And his buddy's like, nah man, it's just me, Zach, I'm fucking with you. Yeah. And he's like, how's hell? He's like, it's pretty good, man. I've met this band and this band and I saw a duo between here and he's like, but you've got to keep the band going. He's like, can't be Deathgasm anymore. All the guys died. We got to come up with a new name. And they're going through freaking band names again with his buddies, like, you know, ghost voice through the stereo. And supposedly rumor has it there's going to be a Deathgasm 2 in the works. So I'll be interested to see that when it comes out.
You know, it definitely needs to be titled something like, you know, The Encore or something like.
Yes. The Secret Tract.
Man, that's the thing, like, that you don't really see in albums or anything. Well, fuck, you don't even get albums anymore. Like,
it's hard to do the hidden track when you're dealing with digital now, because, you know, back then, you know, you the record ends and you just keep hanging because you're too lazy to go turn it off.
It's like, why is like, the 13th song later, 23 like minutes long?
Yeah.
After 17 minutes of silence.
The sound of silence. And now we move from our foreign film to a brand new entry into the horror genre. Just released this Friday the 13th, we have Netflix original, The Babysitter.
Or, you know, Home Alone 4.
I said, so it's either home, you know, a bloody version of Home Alone or Die Hard as a kid. He's trapped in a house, he's fighting terrorists or, you know, Satanist. Yeah, it's... He just doesn't say yippee-ki-yay. Hey, he even goes out the window in a improvised rope. I mean, that's pretty John McClane right there.
Yeah, I don't know. For me, you know, just because of the way that, you know, he defends himself, I had a lot of throwbacks to Home Alone for me. You know, if Home Alone was rated R, this would be it, you know? I mean, granted, you know, here he's got a hot babysitter, which... I think I need a babysitter.
Yeah. Yes, 2017's Babysitter, directed by Mick G. If anyone's familiar with everything from music videos to TV shows to, you know, he has directed a lot of things. Written by Brian Duffield, starring Samara Weaving as B, the aforementioned hot babysitter. And any fans of Flash and Arrow... Robbie Amell is Max. The psycho football player. And of course,
why is Judah, he shirtless?
Judah Lewis as Cole Johnson.
Why not? He's super ripped.
And not only that, it's a coming of age story, because young Cole here is a self-described pussy. He's scared of everything. Yeah. And just to put that, you know, the imagery to drive that that home. He gets hit in the head by various sports balls, like I think a basketball, a soccer ball, and every time someone yells from off screen, pussy! And then you see his house, there's chickens everywhere. He has a chicken couch. There's a chicken statue on the table. There's just framed pictures of chickens. It's like, you're hammering the point, this dude is a chicken because there's chickens everywhere.
Well, I mean, I love it when, you know, he runs around the side of the house to find his mom, you know, underneath the crawl space doing some, you know, stuff. And it's like, how can you be down there? There's all kinds of spiders and creepy crawlies and everything else. And, you know, it's like, well, you know, sometimes things just need to get done, you know?
Yeah, I don't want to be down here, yeah. But I got to get stuff done.
And, you know, then she's like, you know, then he, you know, poses the afforded mention, you know, question. Mom, do you think I'm a pussy?
And she's like, do you know what that word means?
She hits her head on the thing. It's like, do you know what that means? And it's like,
yeah,
you
scared of everything.
And then goes to walk away and be like, you know, by the way, Mom, I know, you know, pussy is a reference to vagina. No, you don't say it.
He's like, I know it means vagina. I'm not a retard. She's like, you do not say retard, but it's okay to say pussy. Nope.
So, I mean, the way that the film is self-aware and, you know, doesn't take itself very seriously, I think is what makes The Babysitter such a great, you know...
Yeah, I mean, like I said, he's bullied, he's scared of everything, and his only friend really is the super hot babysitter and the girl next door. And the girl next door is like...
E.T. fingers.
Yeah, the girl next door is all like, yeah, I bet you're like, yeah... Your babysitter has sex after you go to bed. She probably has dudes over all the time, whatever. And he's like, no, it's not. She's like, well, have you ever stayed up to watch? He's like, no. And he's like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to stay awake and, like, catch her this time. And, you know, a bunch of people shows up. And, she's not having an orgy. She's the leader of a satanic cult, and they need to make a sacrifice and harvest the blood of the innocent. And now he's going to have to man up and fight off a cult of Satan worshipers. You're occupied by, like, you know, the stereotypical high school crowd. You've got the jock football player, the head cheerleader. You've got the...
Kind of the nerdy, like, Cole, you know, maybe another, what, 6 years into the future?
Yeah. Sacrifice Sam, because they got to kill a virgin. Or at least sacrifice him. You've got the foreign exchange student, the hot... Japanese chick.
Sophie, I think.
Yeah, and then you've got the wannabe rapper guy, because, like, pretty much they're trying to do this spell that basically you sacrifice somebody, mix the blood of the innocent with them, and read some stuff out of a magic book, and you get whatever you want. So, you know, the cheerleader wants to become a reporter. The the
out of all of the things, I want to be a reporter.
The one guy wants to be a famous rapper. They never really say what the Chinese girl or the football player wants, but they all want something.
Yeah. I guess we're just going to leave out the epic kissing, you know, spin the bottle, truth or dare.
Yeah, the spin. Yeah. Which that was kind of funny, too, because, like, when he's... I love it because he's texting the girl across the street and he's like, they're here. And she's like, there's more than one person. Ooh, she's having an orgy. And then you see him like having to Google what orgy is. He's like, oh. So he's watching him play spin the bottle in it. And like the one guy like dares her to like kiss everyone. So she goes around the room kissing everyone. And when she kisses him, she like does like the freaking Godfather 2. Like just gives him the kiss. Like, I knew it was you, Fredo. I mean, she's hot and she's kind of nerdy. Like, no wonder the kid's like, I'm in love. Oh, yeah. Fuck, she's psycho. So eventually kisses everyone in one form or another, makes out with the cheerleader, licks the rapper's face, and yeah, gives the Chinese girl a kiss on the head, and then gets to making out with the nerd guy and sticks two knives in his head because he's going to be sacrificed. And you're like, well, this took a dark turn quickly. But even then, there's, like, these weird comments because they're trying to, like, drain his blood for this thing. And the one guy's, like, poking on his head. He's like, I think he's out. My side's broken. All of a sudden, it just shoots, like, in his face. And he's, like, just covered in blood. It's like some stuff out of Army of Darkness
or
whatever.
Well, I mean, I was almost, like, I kept having flashbacks to, you know, a lot of Quentin Tarantino's works. Like, I was like, with all that blood, that has to be homage to Quentin.
Yes, and Robbie Mills' character is like, dude, all that blood was just in his boner. I said it's like a bloody Home Alone.
Well, I mean, it gets to the bloody Home Alone because, you know, like it's weird. Like, knowing Cole and his wussification, why would you offer him a shot? Like, you know this kid, like you could do anything else, like drug a cupcake or something, you know, completely innocent. Don't give him a shot because you know he's not going to do it.
Well, you know, she's like, you know, apparently had done it, offered him before. So no telling, this might not even have been the first sacrifice they had in his house. And while he was been doped up, you know, the only reason why he...
And you know, that's very true. Maybe that's why the parents, shot, yeah. You know, keep making the reference, hey, don't move the furniture.
That's right. I freaking missed that the first time around. Cause yeah, when the parents are going to leave, cause the parents do like a weekend date night to where they go to a hotel for the weekend. You know, it's like, hey, don't be moving the furniture around. We just waxed or whatever. And I'm like, the fuck. And they're like, oh yeah. That's... So yeah, that's probably not the first time he's been drugged and a sacrifice has gone on in his living room while he's been upstairs asleep. The only difference was this time he's like, I'm going to try to stay awake. So I'm not taking the shot.
I keep getting this booze and I fall asleep. I wake up with a Band-Aid on my arm. But, I mean, I think that's kind of funny. Like, you know, when it's, you know, they need the blood of the innocents, so they all run upstairs to, you know, where, you know, Cole's butchered his escape attempt. So now he's just, you know, laying in bed trying to play possum. And, you know, the whole time they're, you know, very delicately robbing him and everything else. And, you know, there's like, all right, we need the blood. And, you know, he expects daggers in the head, but, you know, no. He just has to suffer through his fear of needles and, you know. Yeah,
that's like the first step of him, like, manning up. Because you see earlier in the movie, he's, like, scared shitless of needles and, like, screams when he gets a flu shot. So now he's having to, like, you know, hold it in and not scream. And then she misses the vein and has to poke him again. He has that look like, fucking bitch. Yeah. I've been there, you know, trying to take blood at the doctor's office and they miss. You're like, goddamn, you got to poke me again.
Sometimes it's just like, hey, can I try? Like, yeah. I know I'm not, you know, necessarily, you know, an expert at this.
How about you aim here?
Yeah.
Oh. But yeah, once Cole's escape attempt is foiled, like, he's got a pocket knife and he's talking shit to them and trying to, like, you know, cut his way out in typical action movie stat. And they're like, dude, you know there's a mirror behind you and we can see, like, you trying to cut the rope.
But, you know, I got to say, he's persistent, though, because, I mean, you know, at no point does he, you know, stop trying to cut the rope. You know, it's like, oh, it's so cute. He's still trying.
Oh, yeah. And then the cops show up because he did call 911. And then, you know, of course, the cops get immediately killed. And another blood, you know, squirt of blood hits a homeboy in the face, and the cheerleader gets shot in the tit. But I just love it. He's like, oh, I got another, you know, dude's blood in my mouth. He's like, 3 out of 4 people have STDs. I've got 2 guys' bloods in my mouth. I got AIDS now. I know it. Do the math. Yes. He was definitely not prepared for what he signed up for.
No, not at all. Oh. But I mean, that's what's great, you know? And, you know, the epic, you know, deaths. I mean, tripping over the RC car, over the, you know, banister, into the glass statue through the jugular. That's a pretty epic way to go.
Yeah. And like I said, yeah, like not only like, I mean, he hits his head on the banister, which probably broke his neck. But no, he still falls on like some kind of a ward that just like goes right through his neck. And then he, you know, manages to climb out the window and hide like underneath, you know, mans up, goes underneath the house where I don't know why there's 15 tarantulas living in these people's basement. I didn't think tarantulas like were normally found in in the suburbs. But
well, as somebody dude that, has an infestation, you know, loves and collects tarantulas, it's movies like this that make the Brachypelma Smithy. That's the black with, you know, the red striped legs. That's why they're so fucking hard to find. And when you do find them, they're expensive because it's like, oh, let's do a spider movie. So we need all the Brachypelma Smithies that we can find. And, you know, it's like, oh. Really? Really?
Yeah, so he's hiding under there. The Sonya comes to find him. He ends up taking her out with a bottle rocket and some bug spray and blowing up the basement. Like, you know, freaking. And then
what was it? The big dragon?
Was that the name of the fat dragon?
The fat dragon.
It's a giant rocket. And it's going off, and he's like spraying like a whole can of bug spray in her face because he's like locked her in the basement and he's, or crawl space and spraying through the vent, and it just explodes. And then, like, you know, Max comes walking back, still no shirt, and he's just kind of like applauding. He's like, dude, what was that? He's like, a bottle rocket? Dude, you took out with fire. You're like, I'm not even mad. I'm just kind of impressed. Yeah. And it's his whole dynamic is so weird because he's like, has to kill the kid, but at the same time, he's almost acting like a big brother and like, you know, applauding like the way he's like, you know, standing up to him all that. He's like, I might have to kill you, kid, but, you know, you're kind of awesome.
It's like, you know, it's like, I'm not going to let you go out without your dignity. Like,
yeah. And even then he's like trying to choke him to death, and then he hears somebody egging the house. He's like, oh no, dude, you're gonna let somebody come on your property and disrespect you like that? Go kick his ass. It's like, what? He's like, you know, I was about to keep, no, you better go kick his ass. Makes him go face his bully. I mean, he gets his ass kicked because he tries to do some Billy Jack shit and can't, you know, do a high kick, but he at least stands up for himself for a minute.
I'm gonna put my foot on the right side of your face and there's nothing you can do about it.
Oh,
shenanigans.
And then, yeah, he's like, you know, chases him up to the treehouse. Says, I'm going to give you an honorable death, and ends up falling and getting hung. I mean, it was like, and then she starts chasing him with a shotgun. He's like,
why are there guns?
Yeah, fuck. Oh, but yeah, this, and I love when he's like, you know, she chases him around. He eventually goes back to the house because he's like afraid he's going to get his neighbor girl killed. And there's a thing in, I don't know, it's a rule of making a movie. If you're going to have something pop up, you have to introduce it earlier in the movie. So if you see a knife or a gun and it's like specifically pointed out by the filmmaker, you know that's going to pop up in a key moment in like the third act. So you know that like he was playing with a knife earlier, his dad put it in the dishwasher, it's got to come up. So he's getting chased by the cheerleader through the kitchen. You're like, here it is. Here's the point where he pulls the knife. He opens the thing and it's gone. And it cuts to a scene of his mom and dad at the hotel, and his mom's like jerking off his dad. She's like, did you put that knife in the dishwasher? Yeah. He's like, it doesn't go there. It goes in the knife block. So it's like, it's kind of like a metaphor. Cause like, you know, he just jerked off the audience by making you think the knife's going to be there. And then it cuts to them like jerking off her dad. I was like, that's pretty fucking brilliant.
Yeah. I felt like this movie toyed with my emotions. But the other thing was the iconic, you know, car from, you know, Days Gone By, you know, was, you know,
the like early 70s like, Chevelle, like hot rod.
Mom left dad, so he went and got his dream car to, you know, make her jealous, but it's only a car.
But yeah, him and like I said, in the ultimate manning up, him and B have a, she finally explains her whole plot. He's like, y'all have hunted me all night. Like, you know, he gets her magical book and is threatening to burn it. And he's like, you've been chasing me all fucking night. You know, I deserve to know what the fuck is going on. And she finally explains to the whole Satan cult thing. And he's like, but hey, it can be just me and you. We'll call the cops, tell them that all the arresting people attacked us and all this other stuff. And he's like, so basically you're saying you've got a plan. And he's like, she's like, yeah. And he's like, I'm not the first kid you've done this to, have you? He's like, no. And she's like, well, guess what? I got a plan too. Lights the freaking book and runs and throws it into like the front corner of the living room. So she chases after it. And earlier he's talking about like, you know, he's like, I'm changing my RC car to a fastback because it's got more downforce. It'll hit the ramp and do a barrel roll and land right in the crash zone where I want it. So while she's trying to put the book out, he goes and steals the hot rod, jumps it off a ramp and right through the front window.
The old treehouse roof served a hell of a purpose, huh?
Yeah. But yeah, that's like the most badass way to take somebody out. And he's like, you know what? I'm an adult now. I've stolen a car, and when I found out you were the bad guy, I stole a car and ran it through you. I don't need a babies anymore.
But, I mean, you know, I kind of like, you know, that whole, you know, closing moment between, you know, Cole and B, where, you know, it's, you know, I stole a car, I ran it through my house, and, you know, crushed you, and, you know, she's like, you know, well, you know what? You never did tell me, you know, who your team, you know, your makeup would be.
Yeah, because one of the things when they were partying, he's like, you've got five or six dream team that save the Earth from intergalactic threat. And she reads off hers. And of course, he says, yeah, you didn't ask me what my but I got to say, before you reveal his team, her team was, I liked her plan. Cause she's like Kirk, Picard, Jeff Goldblum and Will Smith from Independence Day, Ripley and an alien egg. We'll get Kirk and Picard to fly them in and do the captain in. Goldberg and Will Smith's going to break into the enemy base because they're familiar with that shit. And then Ripley's going to drop an alien egg on the bad guy so it freaking facehuggers him. And then, you know, they all escape. And then a couple hours later, the bad guy's like, I got some stomach ache. Blah! Yeah. And then you have Ripley kill the alien. I mean, because that's what she does. It was a pretty brilliant plan. Yes. I had to give it to her.
Like, I mean, nerd cred, like, level 1,000.
Yes.
But I guess, you know, when you play in the dark arts, you can, you know, essentially manipulate anything.
Yeah.
If it's too good to be true.
But as you were saying, she he's like, you never asked what my team was. And she's like, I didn't. You know, what is it?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, that whole kind of closing and, you know, where, you know, as she's like, you know, going to take her final breaths or whatever. And, you know, she, you know, holds up her finger and he's like, fuck you, bitch. Like, I'm out.
Yeah. But his team was Admiral Adama, Data, the Predator, and then them two.
Yeah.
It's like, I didn't know I could include myself on the team. And he's like, it's sci-fi. You can do whatever you want. And then she's like, ET hands. He's like, fuck you. I'm out. Oh.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, this movie had, I mean, the humor elements, the nerdy elements, you know, the over-the-top, gory, the breaking of the fourth wall. I mean, just a whole lot of awesomeness coming together in a full package with, you know, this. I think I, you know, I've seen this now three times, so.
And Billy Jack on a projector. Like, I haven't seen Billy Jack in years. Yeah.
Dude, that kind of made me want to, like, set up a projector in the yard and stuff.
Hell
like
yeah.
That.
Like, I want one of those now. That's badass, like, using your garage as a projection screen.
Well, I mean, not only that, but you're acting out, you know, all the dialogue and the action sequences and everything. Like,
yeah, before she turned Satanist, I was like, damn, I wish I had a babysitter that cool. She's awesome. And I do like the one when he finally talks to the neighbor girl and they're hiding from her and she kisses him and he's just got this shocked look on his face. She's like, what's wrong? He's like, the last person I saw got kissed got two knives in his head. She's like, don't worry, all girls aren't psycho.
But like, I mean,
thank God.
You know, I do got to give him props because, you know, he runs out and he's trying to lock the bathroom door and she's like, what are you doing? And it's like,
I'm trying to protect you.
She's like, you know, it locks from the inside. Oh, well, shit. She's like, hey, by the way, let's make out next time. He's like, yeah. What the?
Yeah, this guy went from like, you know, yeah, he grew up quick that night. Like, you know, the aftermath, he's just sitting there chilled. His parents are like, what happened? He's like, Mom, Dad, I don't need a babysitter anymore. Yeah, that's like, as far as a new entry into the horror comedy genre, like I said, if you haven't watched, it's on Netflix. Go check it out if you haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, a great highlight.
Well, let's talk about some classics. some OG horror comedies. Way back to 1985's Transylvania 65,000.
Fake news, move on.
Yeah, directed by Rudy Deluca. I mean, it's a, you know, I remember seeing it in 1985 when I was a kid, and it was hilarious back
then.
Well,
you know what? I probably would have thought it was more hilarious if I didn't look at it and say, shit, that's news media today. Like, yeah, back in 1985, it would have been the National Enquirer or, you know, some other tabloid, but today
it's... remake of CNN.
So, I mean, you know, like a lot of the, you know, what would have been downfalls, you know, now I'm like, fuck, it feels like modern times. I'm out. It went very George Orwellian on me.
Yeah, because Jeff Goldblum, who we just talked about, and Ed Begley Jr. are tabloid reporters.
It's really weird to see very young Jeff Goldblum. Like, big age difference between this and Jurassic Park.
So a video has surfaced of supposedly Frankenstein's monster appearing in Transylvania. So they send them there to try to ferret out if there's a real monster. And yeah, basically, like I said, they work for a tabloid. It's like, we don't even care if there's a real monster, but get us some kind of story. And he finds out that there's not only there's a Frankenstein, but there's a Wolfman and a Dracula and a mummy and some hunchbacks and a, you know, comedian butler played by you know, Kramer.
Yes, master.
But you know, in reality, it's you know, the monsters aren't monsters. They're people that need some kind of like medical attention, and the local government takes the money they're supposed to be getting to help these people and pocketing it and sending them all to like an insane asylum where this, you know, one doctor happens to like fake all their deaths so he can give them the medical treatment they need. So Wolfman is just a guy that has like a hair growing problems, and you know, the Frankenstein was a guy who was in a car accident and needed like extensive reconstruction, and the mummy is a girl who had plastic surgery and needed to be kept in a, you know, an oxygen rich environment, so he had her in like a coffin and completely wrapped in bandages because she had like full body surgery because she was, you know, apparently fugly beforehand. And the vampire is just an infomaniac that got a nose job.
With the fake fangs.
And I got to say, Gina Davis, pretty hot in 1985. But yeah, this movie was so freaking weird back in the day. It's like, I don't know if it holds up as much as some of the others, but like I said, when I saw it as a kid, it was pretty hilarious.
I mean, I can definitely see, you know, like I said, I...
It had a very Mel Brooksian feel to it.
Yes. I mean, it really wasn't a bad movie. Like I said, it just went to reality with, you know, today's, you know, political climate and everything else that I'm like, it killed it for me. No fault of the movie. But,
it's a lot of dumb slapstick comedy, but like I said, it's you know, in the history of horror comedy, you kind of have to...
Oh, yeah. No, it definitely deserves a place. It absolutely deserves a place.
But another classic that probably has a little bit more... has held up and is still, you know, quite, you know, loved is 1988's Beetlejuice, directed by Tim Burton, back when he used to make live-action movies before everything he made was animated. Yeah. Pre-Batman.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean Beetlejuice, I one of the most, you know, timeless classics there are. Yeah, I mean
Alec Baldwin, Gina Davis, and of course the legendary Batman himself, Michael Keaton as Beetlejuice, and Winona Ryder.
Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Yeah, so I don't even think I need to describe this movie because if anyone's not seen it by now, it's like it's, you know, a recently dead couple realizes that they're, you know, are no longer amongst the living, and now their home that they've worked so hard on is being occupied by, Yeah. Now they would probably, if they'd remade it, it would probably be hipsters, but it's like yuppies who are destroying their home and making weird art projects and stuff. So they're trying to learn how to be ghosts and haunt them out of there. And when that fails, they have to call in a ghost mercenary, a human exterminator that to just try to scare them off, who is like, you know, the ultimate douchebag. Beetlejuice. Even other ghosts don't like him, and because, yeah, he's kind of an asshole.
Yeah, absolutely. Which, I mean, you know, we talked about slapstick comedy. I mean, this is very much it here. I mean, like,
if nothing else, it made the song Deo, like, popular again.
Deo.
Daylight come and me won't go home. And then, of course, Beetlejuice has a whole plan. He can become a real boy again if he can manage to marry the daughter in some kind of weird spell. And so he tries to force Winona Ryder to marry him. Yeah, and it's just some of the stuff, like the makeup effects on this movie were you know, awesome for, you know, the mid-80s. Especially when they, at one point, they go to, I don't know, like the death help desk to get advice. And there's like all these people who have like recently died waiting in the waiting room. There's a you know, explorer with a shrunken head that has obviously ran into some voodoo doctors. And, you know, there's a freaking witch doctor. There's like a lady who's been cut in half and her legs are sitting next to her. And then the whole football team that apparently bus crashed and the whole football team died.
Yeah, like, it's very morbid in a sense, but, I mean, the way that, you know, it's shot and everything else, it's like, I think this might just be hell, because even in death, like, you can't avoid the monotony of, you know, just being stuck and not figuring out what the hell to do.
And it, you know, spawned some animated stuff, and it's one of the things that's kind of stayed popular in pop culture. And suppose there's even like a sequel in development no telling when that will actually, if it actually comes out. But yeah, it's one of those that just like, it's, everyone has seen it, and it's like one of those things that, yeah, every couple of years you kind of have to check it out.
Yeah. Beetle guys.
Oh, it's kind of almost like, what was it, Candyman? Where you say Candyman the Mary so many times, you got to say Beetlejuice so many times.
Well,
to,
I mean, it's like, you know, what was it, Bloody Mary and all the other stuff, like lock yourself in the bathroom, look in the mirror, and, you know, all those, you know, freaking games.
Yeah, I want a copy of their hand manual, though, too, the handbook for the recently deceased. I just want that sitting on my bookshelf, like, you know, just screaming when they come over and see that hanging on the shelf.
Yes. So, I mean, I don't know. This film still very much holds up. I mean, it's as funny and enjoyable as the, you know, day I watched it. I mean, you know, this film actually enjoyed, you know, quite a success at the box office, too. I mean, you know, $15 million budget, grossed, you know, a little over $73 million. So, I mean, that's you know, no small feat, you know, especially thinking back to 1988.
Yes. And Jeffrey Jones is Charles Dietz, who was also in Transylvania 6000. Catherine O'Hare is Lydia, or Mama Dietz. So, I mean, it had a lot of, like, famous, you know, comedic actors at the time. Oh, yeah, and the song was Harry Belafonte's Jumpin' the Line.
Yes. So, I don't know. I mean, I love the shit out of it. I don't know. I think, as you know, we talk about some other stuff too. Another horror comedy that really comes to mind, you know, this one's going back a couple of years, but Tucker and Dale vs. Evil was really, really high on my list.
Yeah, 2010's Tucker and Dale vs. Evil, directed by Eli Craig, which, you know, pretty much an independent horror. I mean, it never got, you know, wide release, but it was one of them that, you know, on video is kind of, and it's kind of blown up. And I love it because it's where the babysitter is kind of screwed with some of those horror movie tropes. This one just flat out makes fun of all horror movie tropes where yes. traditionally the hillbillies are the psycho killers and the college students are the innocent victims. This time around, the hillbillies are the innocent victims and the kind of the college students are the bad guys.
Well, I mean, I think that this puts in retrospect, you know, where the college kids are very much aware of horror movie culture and, you know, they play into every, you know, single thing and say, well, you know, if we put two and two together, this is, you know, how that would play out. So, I mean, you get your throwbacks to, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you know, Michael Myers, Jason yeah. Voorhees.
I mean, even from the start when, like, you know, they pass Tucker and Dale on the road and they look at him, every, like, hillbilly horror movie has that thing where the locals are staring you down. And then when he tries to go, you know, he's like, man, just go talk to her. You're a homeowner. You're a businessman. You know, go talk. And he walks up, you know,
with a freaking sign.
With a freaking sign. Cause they're they've bought a cabin in the woods and they're going there to fix it up. They've built a summer home. And so he walks up with this thing. He's like, wait, just, you know, whatever you say, smile and laugh so they think you're friendly. And he's like, y'all ain't from around here, are you? And just looks completely psycho. And then later on, like, you know, they're out fishing and the one girl like slips and falls and hits her head and knocks herself out. So they try to like give her back to her friends. They're like, hey, college kids, we've got your friend. And they're like, oh my God, they've kidnapped her. And they all take off running. And it's like them just trying to be nice. Look like the stereotypical horror movie killers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's so over the top, you know, where it's, you know, gosh. I mean, you know, the freaking kid, you know, tripping head first ends up in, you know, the freaking wood chipper. I mean, you know, I remember that stunt, you know, from, you know, a couple of the Tales from the Crypt episodes and
yeah, even like when the girl, because since they take off, they take her back to their cabin, and she wakes up the next day, and he tries to bring her breakfast, and she's like, "Oh God, no!" Because thinks about it, he's like, "Oh crap, she must not like pancakes. Quick, I'll make something else." And then they finally like convince the one. They're like, "We got to go in there and rescue her." And the one guy's like, "What if they're, you know, not killers? We should just go talk to them." They're like, "Fine, well, you go talk to them." And he tries to go up to the cabin and knock on the door, and Dale is like cutting a tree and ends up hitting a hornet's nest with his chainsaw and starts getting attacked by bees. So he comes like running out with a chainsaw. And if you watch, he's doing the same like leather face dance. And they're like, oh shit. And like, they take off running because they think he's trying to kill him. And he's just trying to get away from bees.
And the one guy, you know, ends up spearing himself. And, you know, then he sees the bee like, you know, in his final moments. Like, oh.
And it just keeps happening there, you know, so they see him later, like, digging a latrine, and the girl's out there helping him and stuff. They're like, well, you hang out till your friends come back. And they're like, oh my God, they're making her dig her own grave. So they come running up to try to push them into the wood chipper, and he moves the last second. The guy just jumped. They're like, it must be a suicide pact. All these kids are coming on our land and killing themselves. It's just, like, the weirdest, like, you know, misunderstanding.
Yes.
Like, yeah, you know, it could almost be like a very dark sitcom.
Yeah. And I mean, even, you know, as far as like, you know, the sheriff and our, you know, and stuff like that coming to visit and, you know, meeting his demise and just.
Yeah, the sheriff finally comes and they're all covered in blood. They have like half a body and he's like, we've just had a doozy of a day, officer. And he's like, no, like, you know, we found this girl and she got knocked out and these kids like, you know, killed themselves and attacked us. And he goes inside to like check on the girl and ends up like hitting a loose board and gets smacked in the head with like a nailed board. And so he comes running back out of the house with like nails in his head and the kids are like, oh my God, they've killed the sheriff. Oh yeah. It's just like, yeah, just one like accent after the other. And then it turns out like one of the kids is actually a psycho and is trying to kill everybody. But yeah, it's like I said, it's like the reverse of every hillbilly horror movie you've ever seen.
It's like if the hills didn't have eyes.
Oh yeah. And Tucker who you know, hadn't been able to man up, you know, again, another coming of age story. You know, the psycho kidnaps the, the girl and takes her to a sawmill, and he's finally like, "You want a crazy hillbilly? Fine, I'll give you a murderous hillbilly." And he gets the chainsaw and the mask and finally looks the part and has to fight the kid with his chainsaws.
Yes. All the while trying to rescue the damsel in distress.
Who keeps getting knocked out in inappropriate times. So she's like missing all the crazy killer stuff. But and I like at the end when he's finally gotten the girl and takes her out on a date, and he's like cleaned up, not hillbilly looking. And he's like, "I bought you a present." And it's a helmet, because she gets smacked in the head.
Yes. Helmets are a little bit of an inside joke.
Yeah. I completely forgot about that element of the movie until I watched it again. I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna have to take this one home. And
a specific someone who we shall not name.
Yeah, is going to enjoy this film or slap me.
Probably slap you while enjoying the film, just to make it extra sadistic.
Oh, but yeah, like I said, I love how this, like, you know, any of us that are fans and have followed like all horror movies, you know, like just the tropes of the idiot kids and like the stereotypical hillbillies, you know, doing things that make them look even more and more guilty. Like, even when they're trying to like be nice, when they're like, "Hey, we've got your friend," you know, it just sounds like, and then they're like, "Well, they took off. Let's leave them a note." "I don't have anything to leave them a note with. I got this hatchet." So they just like carve into a tree, like, "We have your friend." And it just looks more and more bad, but they're like so naive that they're like, don't realize how bad it looks. Because of them, like, "We're just trying to fix up our summer home."
Yeah, like, "We don't understand." Yeah, great times. So you want to talk about some other films that, you know, didn't officially make the list, or?
Of course, you know, Tuck and Dale starring Alan Tudyk and Tyler Labine. But, yeah, I mean, there's plenty of, say, honorable mentions that didn't make our top five here. But, I mean, you have the whole Scary Movie series of films.
Which is just a spoof in itself.
Yeah. I think there's five of them. Three of them are really good. Don't watch the rest of them. Like, the first one makes fun of Scream. The second one makes fun of The Ring. And then after that, it starts getting... Or I think one of them makes fun of House on Horror Hill. But then eventually, the Wayans brothers who started it have nothing else to do with it. And it just gets dumber and dumber after, like, the first two or three. So when they start making fun of Signs, which... When they start making fun of movies that I didn't like to begin with, I'm like, yeah, this is not worth watching anymore.
God, Signs is just an atrocity.
I don't even think I saw the fifth one. I just remember the one that made fun of Signs, and it was all about alien movies. It just, yeah, it just kept getting weirder and weirder. Oh, what else you got that's falls in the horror movie comedy suggestion?
As I try to find one of the many lighters here. One that really comes to mind for me is Shaun of the Dead.
Oh, yeah, Shaun of the Dead, which I think we talked about when we did our zombie episode, is, you know, where this makes fun of hillbilly slasher movies. That one's, you know, the tropes of a zombie film. And another one that we didn't bring up because we had mentioned it on our way back in, like, episode two or three when we talked about Josh Whedon films was Cabin in the Woods.
Yes.
That one is a great horror movie, comedy, sci-fi mashup. And not only does it make fun of horror movie tropes, it makes fun of all of them. Because they're like having like a... Because the whole... If you haven't seen the whole plot of the movie, is there's a ritual that must be performed every so many years where a sacrifice must be made to keep like these, you know, gods from entering our world. So they have to sacrifice a group of teenagers. And it's the stereotypical group from all horror. You got the virgin, the nerd, the jock, you know, and like they have to have like all the stereotypes present, and then also have to kind of choose the way they die. So they put them in this cabin basically there's a reality show going on around these murders, and everyone's like watching this stuff, and they're placing bets on how they're going to die, because like whatever item they picked is what beast it's going to unleash. So, you know, there's like zombies, werewolves, mummies, like all, there's like a whole list of like all the monsters that are possible, and they're betting on which one is going to get chosen for this this sacrifice. And it even shows that there's not just the American version, there's like the Japanese version, and it's like, you know, Japanese kids in a school dealing with like a grudge type monster. And it's like, not only is it making fun of like all the classic American horror movies, is making fun of like horror movies from other cultures and countries. And it's just kind of this, the weirdest, like, you know, it could almost have been an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yes. Another one that comes to mind is Idle Hands.
Oh, yes.
You know, just the perils of a teenage boy and, you know.
I mean, sometimes your hand goes evil.
Yep. Slither was another one that,
yep.
You know. Just,
yeah.
I have hard to even recommend that one. Like,
a James Gunn classic with Nathan Fillion as the hero town sheriff in a town, and you know, attacked by giant slug-like, or well, almost like a, I don't know, possession type thing where these bugs are taking over people, and it's just so.
It's almost weird. Like if Tremors have, you know, the ability to possess people.
Yes.
Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of a classic, yeah, Little Shop of Horrors is, you know, not only a horror movie, but a musical as well.
Yes. And then we did talk about this one before, but Bubba Hotep, you know, is definitely, you know, way up on the list for me. But
I mean, speaking of Bubba Hotep, you could even include, like, you know, since we talked about them all in the Bruce Campbell, you know, any of the Evil Dead or Army of Darkness or even the Ash vs. Evil Dead series, you know, definitely follows into that comedy horror genre. So, you know, if you don't want to go full scary movie this year, there's plenty of lighter options to to try, and yeah, add a funny bone to your skeleton bones.
Yep, and then of course Attack of Killer Tomatoes. Because if you're gonna get attacked by anything, why not, you know, a tomato?
Going down that, I mean, even was it what's it called? Attack of the Killer Clowns,
yep.
From Outer Space, and you know, pretty much anything that's produced by Troma. I mean, Troma has always been the staple of low budget comedic horror movies that are, you know, almost like half porn, half horror comedy. Because you know, you got to have naked people in a horror movie. That's just, you know, one of the requirements.
And then I think, you know, wrap it up on, you know, since we talked about, you know, Tim Curry and It not too long ago, how about, you know, Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Even It, as much of a horror movie it is, it's still funny. I mean, it has enough jokes in there that I wouldn't call it horror comedy, but it's definitely got some amusing elements. Hell, at this point, you know, if, you know, any horror movie can be funny if it's bad enough.
Yes.
Whether it was intended to be a horror comedy or not. I mean, then you got stuff like Zombievers. And what was the one about the stoner zombie?
Oh.
where the weed turned them into zombies?
Hold on.
Yeah, I must have the comedy horror.
The is co-ed and the zombie stoner.
Yes. And most of these you can find on Netflix. Just
or at one point comedy. You could. I yeah. don't know about now.
I know, mean, Zombievers is still there. I saw that pop up the other day when I was looking for Deathgasm. Yeah, my suggested Netflix videos are all fucked up now from what I've been watching this last week. And, you know, Stranger Things comes back this Friday. So.
Yes, it does.
We got that to look forward to. You know, this goes up on Tuesday. By Friday, the Stranger Thing will time to return to the Upside Down and get your spook on. So as we wrap up, what's your final thoughts on this here H. Upman cigar?
I'm going to say probably medium to medium full. The flavor profile was pretty good. You know, it wasn't as complex as, you know, some of the cigars that we've smoked. You know, and for me personally, you know, the profile here was more earthy, more leathery, not a whole lot of spice, which is something I really enjoy from a cigar. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of people that, you know, if you're a fan of, you know, Nicaraguan cigars, you know, this is going to be up your alley. For my personal taste, you know, I would like just a little bit more of a complexity from it. By no means is it a bad cigar. It's very well constructed. You know, it was just a, you know,
it's not as strong and
something
as spicy
just a little
I'm
bit lacking,
in,
you know, from the Banker
and Nicaraguan stuff. And you know, AJ Fernandez has, the stuff he makes himself plus the collaborations with other people. He's I've not had a bad cigar from him yet. But I mean, it while it wasn't as strong as I'm used to, it was consistent throughout and had a not a super complex flavor profile, but a good flavor profile. You know, it's one that, you know, this might be a good pairing cigar with some whiskey or something because it's not going to be overpowering. It's a nice consistent flavor, so you can pair it with something without it flavor vastly changing
for
on
me,
you throughout.
You know, this is a it's early afternoon. I'm out barbecuing. I feel like having a cigar, but I don't want a powerhouse of a cigar. I would reach for this. This is my, midday smoke, whereas, my evening smokes tend to be, very much powerhouses.
It's not so complex that it's a cigar that you have to concentrate on and, to look at those nuances. It's something you could just smoke while you're doing something else. So it's not something that requires, it's a good solid cigar. It's not something that's going to require you to sit and experience it.
Yes.
So yeah, I'm going to pick one up. Yeah. It's got its uses.
I mean, and it's definitely priced right. You know, I mean, that was the other thing too, is, you're looking, from that $8-$10 range. And, I mean, there's a lot of really great smokes at that price point. So, I mean, this definitely falls in, that category. So, like I said, I got nothing bad to say about it. For me personally, just look for a little bit more, of a kick or a jolt. But, this may be, even a great cigar, out on the golf course or whatever. So, like you said, if you're out doing something and you don't want to sit down and, analyze every little flavor, nuance, this is just, I want to light, I want to smoke and have something good.
All right. And with that, we'll be right back. And welcome back to the podcast. We are here today with Captain Bill Harrison of the Atlanta Steampunk Exposition. How you doing today, sir?
Excellent, sir. Excellent. And you?
We are doing excellent. Looking forward to your show. Atlanta now has a new steampunk convention in its inaugural year. Tell us a little bit about what you've got planned for us.
Oh, we've got tons planned for you. Workshops. We're having live buskers running around playing, a brimming vendor's room full of nice stuff. We've got panels by Stephen Chapman, the Netherese, J. James and Sarah. Paige Gardner will be one of our guests as well. We're having a live performance of a new soundtrack written by Valentine Wolf for the classic horror film Nosferatu.
Yeah, that's one of the panels we are definitely looking forward to see them. Yeah, seen Valentine Wolf play before, but to see them do a live soundtrack for Nosferatu, that's going to be a good time.
I know, right? I'm really looking forward to it myself, actually.
So, like, you know, you've been around the steampunk side of things for a long time, mostly as a vendor and an artist yourself. What made you want to jump from, you know, vending at conventions to starting your own convention?
Well, I actually work a lot at conventions. I work for an AV company, and so I probably rent to like 10 or 11 conventions around Atlanta as it is. So I've been doing the convention. I've been working in DragonCon for 26 years as head of tech. And so it's just natural, really. I just did the vending as a side. Whenever a con would be coming up, my wife would start sewing about a month out, and I'd never see her. And so I joked that I was a costume widow. And so then I just discovered the whole steampunk thing and started making the guns, you know, that I sell. And it's just been carried on since then. I just still do it. I mean, I'm up to 1,205 guns I've made now. And she's still sewing away.
So, yeah, just so anybody knows, that your other, what's the name of your other company so they can find you online?
I work for a company called Muse-O-Matic.
No, I meant your gun company.
My gun company? Venusian Airship Pirate Trading Company.
Yeah, if you've been to any, like, Dragon Con or any of the steampunk conventions, you know, Bill's always the one with the table full of interesting toys. I mean, they're all, like, one-of-a-kind guns and stuff. How did, you know, that part of steampunk, did you find that, you know, that, you know, you an interesting art form?
Well, I used to be, back in the old days, I was a pyrotechnician at an outdoor drama, Tecumseh in Chillicothe, Ohio. So I'm not a gun nut, but I've always liked guns. I've always had toy guns all my life. I collected them. I had a big collection of them, and then I just decided I got into the whole steampunk thing, and, you know, you got to start out with a Maverick just like everybody else does. And
oh, yeah. I think we've all painted one of those at this point or another.
And it was a nice little source of income for a while. I mean, it's gone down over the years, I think, a little bit. But, I don't know if we've maxed out the market or what, or I've sold one to everybody that needed one, I guess. I don't know. But I still do it for a creative escape and stuff like that. So that's about it, really.
So, you know, now that you're you have your own con to run, have you learned anything from being on this side of the promoting instead of just vending?
Oh my God, yes. It's like I know what all the other people that run cons go through. I mean, you know, I go to a lot of planning meetings for cons and stuff like that, and yeah, just dealing with everything. It's kind of weird, you know. Vendors and publications and printing and t-shirts and flyers and people you have to deal with, you know, it's crazy. So I really have a lot of sympathy for the other people that run conventions.
Oh yeah. It's like I said, we're hoping you have this is going to be around for a good many years. So we definitely wanted to get the word out about it. When is your convention and how can people get tickets for it?
Well, you can get tickets at AtlantaSteampunkExposition.com, one big word. You can go on the Facebook page. There's an Atlanta Steampunk Expedition Facebook page. And I click on the links, basically. It will be from the 17th to the 19th of November. And all we're doing on the 17th, basically, is, you know, as expensive as hotels are, and this is our first year, we're trying to be a bit frugal. All we're doing on Friday night is basically just having a meeting or a meet and greet, you know, something to celebrate the vendors a little bit. People that have arrived early, we're just going to have a little DJ and a little party that night, and then we get serious on Saturday morning with the panel and stuff. We're running four tracks of panels plus vendors, so
yeah, it's always
busy. I think
it's always good to start the weekend off with a party. You don't have to worry about, you know, missing a party to go to a panel. It's just like the panel is the party for Friday night.
We're trying to do, you know, we'll have another dance, a costume ball on Saturday night, having a costume contest, BFG contest, which is a big gun.
Oh yeah, I may have to start building something for that.
Oh yeah, but it's got to be 2 feet long to even qualify.
Yeah, so, I know. It's like, so far all my creations have been pistol sizes. I'm gonna have to spend some time in the lab to come up with something for that.
There you go. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, looking over your schedule here, I know the one thing I'm looking forward to is the some of your guests this year. James Netherly from people who have watched the Steampunked show, who's also a pretty nice watchmaker, is doing a watchmaking class. I've already bought my tickets for it, and as last I checked, there was still 5 open spots. So if you want to get on that, you know, be sure and get your tickets now.
Carrie with the Unleash the Goddess is doing a make and take jewelry class for the ladies. So, you know, we're trying to give them something to do there. Hopefully we'll keep them entertained for the weekend anyway. And it's near Christmas, and so that vendor's area will be really handy for, you know, getting some early Christmas gifts and stuff like that for people. And it's really super hard to pick a time in the year to have a convention. I don't know if you looked at, you know, like Southern Fandom Resource or any of those sites, but of all the cons in a month, you know, I don't want to step on anybody's toes because they might be a client of mine that I'm already renting gear to for their show, you know. So I had to pick this week and to do my con, and next year I'm probably going to have to move it because the cons I moved to my week for are moving back to the week I'm on, so I might have to go to the week they're on. You know, it's all like up in the air at the moment. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Seems there's a lot of conventions in like the early part of the year, and then after Dragon Con, it gets kind of sporadic.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool that there's something new to do here in the later months of the year. You've been around this for a while. How did you eventually get into steampunk?
You know, we were all at Dragon Con. I mean, I was working it obviously, 7 years ago, whenever that was, 2010 or something like that. And Danny Ashby and his group of guys came in there, full steampunk, first we'd ever seen of it live, and just blew everybody away. Immediately the next year, there was a steampunk track at Dragon Con. They had a party, or a little dance, you know. And of course, it was a new track and their first time, so we put them in the smallest ballroom that we had. And there were at least 100 couples lined up waiting to get into the room. It was amazing the amount of steampunkery that just came out of the woodwork in Atlanta. And I think it was mainly inspired by Danny Ashby and those folks. They had a name for their group, but I can't remember.
It was Outland Armor, I believe. Yeah, I think
that's
how a lot of us found steampunk, is knowing Danny through the years. And that's, I said, that track seems like it grows every year. It's one of the things that I like about steampunk is for the people who are, original artists. It seems to draw a lot of those people, because instead of just, the costume guys that make, recreation of, Marvel or DC or...
Oh, yeah.
Or
so,
it's a great place for people who want to build original characters and not, their versions of somebody else's creation. So
unless you're playing it. You don't cosplay when you're a steampunk, you costume. Because there's no real known steampunk characters to cosplay.
Yeah, it's definitely an open market to do whatever you want.
Yeah. So that's the greatest part about it. I think that one of the nicest things about steampunk is I think we all imagine that back in Victorian times, people were a lot politer and kinder than they actually were. But that carries over into the steampunk, ideals. or everybody's polite and kind and friendly, and that's just, you know, something that's really rare in a lot of fandom. So that's one of the things that really drew me toward it. Of course, I like dressing up too, but, you know, so.
Yes,
that's, you know, my favorite thing, I think. And the creativity, absolutely. That is probably the best part about it.
Yeah, Steph, I've been to a lot of conventions, and it always seems like, I said, the steampunk ones are always a little more laid back, and, you know, there's, you know, everyone's, you know, a friend, whether you've met them yet or not, you know, and there's always a party and people, you know, sharing ideas and alcohol and everything else.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very kind and giving society. Yes. I must agree.
You got any questions over there, Brad?
No, I mean, I'm just looking forward to the con. I mean, you know, steampunk is such a, you know, huge part of what I love to do, just, you know, as we discussed, for the sheer freedom to, you know, do as you please and, you know, come as you are. And, you know, I'm just super pumped. You know, I'm going to be signing up for the watchmaking class myself. And, you know, as somebody that currently does leather work, you know, it'd be great to, you know, be able to get some additional experience and stuff from people whose skill set is far superior to my own.
Yeah, I watched James run a class before. He does some beautiful work and really nice, calm teacher and stuff like that. So, yeah, it should be a pretty good time, actually, for everybody.
Yeah,
and you get an awesome watch.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't wear a watch.
Oh, yeah, those watches look nice. And I'm in the middle of planning a steampunk wedding. So, yeah, I'm going to be shopping for decorations that weekend for sure.
Oh, yeah.
I've already ordered a suit from one of your vendors, the Time Travel Outfitters, so they're going to be making my suit
great.
For me, so I can't wait to talk to them in person.
Yeah, they're great, actually.
So how can people you know, follow you and everything one more time, so make sure everyone gets your websites and whatnot?
Well, I mean, Facebook, pretty much. You know, I'm Bill Harrison on Facebook. Guy with a top hat when you look at all the little pictures. Atlanta Steampunk Exposition Facebook page, the Venusian Airship Pirate Trading Company. We also have the Atlanta Steampunk Gun Club and Sewing Circle, which it's kind of languishing now because we've all been busy with our lives and stuff like that. But, you know, it's kind of behind the convention as well. And there's a couple meetup groups in town, you know, that do stuff, vintage clothing mostly, but there's Steampunk Atlanta. There's another group that's pretty active. They do a lot of meetups and stuff like that. So it's all available on the web at Facebook. So pretty much is the best way to keep up.
All right. Well, with that, we thank you for your time, sir, and we can't wait to see you in November.
You gentlemen have an excellent evening. It's been a pleasure talking to you as well.
The Monster Sci-Fi Show Podcast delivers the latest sci-fi news, plus movie and TV reviews with brilliant and insightful commentary. If you haven't listened to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast before, you will listen to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast now.
What, you think you're some kind of Jedi waving your hand around like that?
Watto, I'm telling everyone to listen to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast.
No, they won't.
Yes, they will, including you.
No, they won't. I'm a Tidarian. My tricks don't work on me. Only money.
Okay, I don't have money, but please listen to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. Sci-fi, from a certain point of view.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
It's time for Beer 30. So what are we drinking this week, Brad?
Well, this week we go out into the graveyard and we dig up Burial Beer Company's Skull Saw. And this is kind of interesting because this is a porter with North Carolina sweet potatoes. Apparently they use like 1,000 pounds of sweet potatoes grown locally in North Carolina where the brewery is located in every batch of Skull Saw.
Yeah, entering. It's Asheville, North Carolina, which is kind of known for craft brew. There's like so many different breweries up that way. And interesting artwork on the can, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, at first, you know, the name caught my eye because you get that, you know, Burial Beer Co., you know, big bold letters right there on the top of the can. You know, so I was like, oh, that sounds Halloweenish. And then, you know, I looked and I was like, oh, it's called Skull Saw. And then the artwork caught my attention. And, you know, I got to say, like, this can sports probably some of the best beer artwork that I've seen.
Yeah.
I mean, just, you know, one side it's, you know, this skeleton with, you know, a canister of, you know, brains on its back with a big saw on the shoulder with a crow poking at the brain. And then on the other side is, I mean, for all intent and purposes, looks very, you know, Poison Ivy-ish.
Yeah, it's like a lady with a hacksaw wrapped in fall leaves and ivy. And look, there's some skulls hidden there underneath the the foliage. Yeah, this is interesting artwork. But a sweet potato beer, not something I've had some potato vodka. Never sweet potato vodka, but it's not overpowering. Yeah, like I expected something like, you know, we discussed like last week about the influx of pumpkin beers this time of year, with a lot of them it's like just way overpowered with the pumpkin spice. This just, you know, adds an interesting flavor to
it. Well, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, I was like you. I was like, what? Sweet potatoes? And then I went online and started researching, and I'm like, oh, this is very much a thing. But, I mean, the thing about the sweet potato is it's going to add, you know, some body. It's going to add, you know, different mouthfeel and some flavors. But, you know, no spice or anything like that. You know, so as we start getting into, you know, soon to be the cooler weather, I was like, I mean, this is a perfect fall beer.
Yeah, I mean, and even the, because, you know, porters tend to be a little bit more coffee flavored. The sweet potatoes kind of cuts that coffee bitterness a little bit. I mean, it's only 35 IBU, 6% alcohol, but it's, you know, it kind of mellows out the harshness of a porter.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm kind of, you know, taken back. I mean, you know, at first it was kind of a, what I would think, just as a joke, or okay, it kind of kept in theme of the podcast, but now I'm like, this is surprisingly very delicious. yeah. I mean, which I'm a big fan of porters anyway, but I mean, this is just there's a subtle, you know, on the back of the palate, that hint of, you know, almost like a nutmeg, or, yeah, you know, or, you know, sweet potato, or, you know, something there that resembles fall. I mean, this beer, yeah, tastes like fall, but in a porter. I mean, it's like everything that I love, with just a subtle, you know,
spice free. So you're not getting that harsh, like cinnamony flavor that you get with, like, you know, your pumpkin beers this time of year. I mean, it tastes like, you know, like just like a sweet potato, but not the like sweet potato pie sweetness. It's hard to describe because it's so like unique. I've not drank anything like this before.
But I mean, it's awesome. I'm loving the shit out of this. You know, this beer is going to be, you know, unfortunately, it looks like right now this beer is only available in North Carolina and in Georgia. You know, so for folks in other states, it may be hard to find. But I mean, I'm almost kind of speechless because it's not what I was anticipating.
No.
You know, this is one of those awesome surprises where you do something and you kind of, you know, take it as a joke, and then you end up getting, you know, very much, you know, pleasingly surprised by the outcome, and like, oh shit, this is a home run beer. But like you said, you know, Asheville is very much known for, you know, producing a lot of good craft beers. So, I mean,
yeah, I mean, this must be so new that I'm not even finding like reviews on this on this shit. Looking at like, because that's one thing about their website. You know, they don't have their beers listed on their website. There's plenty of information about the brewery itself, but they've kind of failed in that regard to making a website, because they don't have any of their beers listed other than what's currently being served in the tap room. But yeah, on your other websites like Beer Addict and Beer Raider, I can't even find, like, you know, it's getting a lot of stars, but there's nobody who's written a review of it yet. So, you know, like I said, it's kind of a mystery beer.
Well, I mean, we've definitely spent, you know, almost 6 minutes giving it a review, and I think it's been a hell of a review. I mean,
and the color of it too, man. It is.
I mean,
it's brown. I mean, it is like, you know, grave dirt brown.
I don't know. I'm a solid five. I'm sold.
Yeah, this is a damn good porter, and then definitely, like I said, the sweet potatoes don't overpower it like, you know, some of your other like beers with some kind of weird additive. It's just very well balanced. I mean, it just tastes like a porter that doesn't taste as coffee like.
Yeah. I mean, but it does. I mean, I don't know if you picked up on it, but I mean, there is something there on the back end that says, "Hey, this is slightly different, and, you know, my taste buds are enjoying the hell out of it."
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm ready for another one.
Yeah. And, you know, their cans, you know, while their website doesn't have a whole lot of information, their can does give a wealth of information. You know, it gives a suggested serving temp and some flavor descriptions as well. So, yeah, I mean, if you pick some of these up, you can find some information there on the can to help you enjoy it best. And like I said, this is fresh out of the fridge, so even if it warms up a little bit, we're probably going to get a little bit more of those flavors coming out.
Well, since that is the beer fridge, and, you know, we are, you know, connoisseurs of the stouts and the porters and, you know, a lot of the beers that require a warmer temp, I do keep, you know, the fridge a little bit warmer than, you know, your upstairs, you know, fridge. So I think it hovers right around, you know, 44, 45 degrees. So it doesn't take long for a beer to hit that 50 degree mark, because we're not pulling it out at the usual, you know, 38 or 39 degrees.
Mm, yeah. So let's stop talking about this so we can go back to drinking it.
And with that, we'll be right back.
And welcome back to the podcast. It's time for some science. You want to learn some shit, Brad?
Hell, I don't know. We haven't done a science segment in so long that, you know, all the prior really knowledge I feel like now has, you know, evaporated and, you know, in the great void of, you know, I don't know. I mean, my sponge is all dried up. I don't know.
That just means you have more room for knowledge now.
Yeah. We'll see. What kind of knowledge are you dropping on us this week?
Well, first off, we've got some universal translators for any Star Trek, Doctor Who, insert sci-fi that doesn't want to use foreign languages.
Exterminate.
Yeah. And these, you know, we've talked about a company, some you know, independent companies, startups trying to do this, but now we've gotten something from Google, like, you know, the king of technology. So, you know, these may actually be, you know, well, not actually. I mean, these are in development. There should be available, you know, by mid-November. They just released them at one of the tech conferences. They're calling them the Pixel Buds, and they're going to, you know, be an accessory for their Pixel 2 phone. But yeah, this is going to be a wireless headphones that links with Google Translate and gives you pretty much instantaneous translation. Like, pretty much you're going to be able to tap it, and then it's going to pick up the words of whoever non-English speaker you're talking to, and then automatically translate it into whatever language you you desire. And, you know, so far they're saying it's going to be able to translate in real time 40 different languages.
That's pretty awesome. I mean, you know, I always feels awkward, you know, pulling out the phone, you're trying to pull up Google Translate, and sometimes, you know, either your pronunciation doesn't quite go through correctly, or sometimes the phone doesn't hear, and, you know, wonky things can happen. So, I mean, maybe this is a little bit more foolproof and doesn't require me to, you know, have to show my stupidity and, you know, whip out my device and be like, hold on, let me show you my ignorance.
But yeah, type of stuff into Google Translate doesn't always get you the best response. So it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, or hell, my voice activated Google, like, doesn't speak redneck, so half the time it's like, what did you say? I'm like, motherfucker. But I mean, it's going to be awesome for especially, you know.
What does Marcellus look like?
Especially for people who want to travel. You know, like I said, I've one of my bucket list items is to take a, you know, trip down to Nicaragua to visit some of the cigar factories and stuff like that. But if I, you know, have an app where I can, you know, at least get some kind of functional Spanish going, or if, you know, if you want to go to Japan or somewhere else, you know, this is going to be something that, you know, you're going to be able to make travel easier, because you're not going to have to worry so much about, you know, keeping a guidebook and trying to decipher languages as you go.
I don't know. You know, I mean, I see it. I mean, I've played around with, you know, Rosetta Stone and stuff like that, just as, you know, I didn't take it as far as, hey, I'm going to, you know, try to become fluent or anything. But, I mean, it definitely helps, you know, just knowing certain key phrases and that type of thing. And I don't know. I mean, I always feel better about myself when I'm visiting another country to, you know a bit of that country's language.
In this case, you can at least, yeah, fake it a little bit. You know, I'd at least want to know whether the guys at the restaurant I'm in is, like, making fun of me. I want to know enough to know if someone has spit in my taco.
But do you really want to know? Do you really?
Probably not, because it's like, yeah, hurt feelings. He called me
and
Gordo.
Everybody's, you know, ego just suffered immensely.
And also the other big point is they're pretty reasonable price point. They're saying these are going to cost, you know, around $159. So, yeah, it's kind of reasonable, especially if you're fixing to go on a vacation or something to pick up a pair of these.
I definitely, you know, could see this as a, you know, a cool step in the direction. You know, if Google can't, you know, understand what you're doing at the privacy of your own home, now you can take Google everywhere.
So next up, you ever listen to the song No Diggity by Blackstreet featuring Dr. Dre?
Yeah, I gotta say that we have.
Well, if you like it, you might be a psychopath.
I've been accused of worse, I guess. I don't know. What's the premise? Like,
well, researchers at New York University have been doing a study where they're trying to figure out if music can be a test for psychopathic behavior. So they basically used 200 songs and 260 people that tested high for potential psychopathic tendencies on a psychological test. And in their test, they found that a high percentage of those who were marked, you know, potentially psychopath did enjoy No Diggity and Lose Yourself by Eminem. Where he said, particularly more like, you know, as a whole, you know, rap music and heavy metal music were on the list. You know, in you know, but popular, I mean, movies and stuff, the psychos are always listening to classical music, and they find out that's actually the opposite. You know, people who listen to classical are less psycho.
I don't know. See, I'd be curious. Like, I always hear these mainstream stuffs. I mean, you know, why don't, you know, fucking throw on some ICP or some Twisted or something else like that. I mean, let's really put these, you know, things to, you know, the test. I mean,
well, they did say that they had a couple other songs that were even better predictors, because, like I said, they had, you know, gotten a sense that this was true, but then they wanted to kind of dial it into actual songs, because then it could be a kind of a screening test that, you know, people wouldn't even have to be aware is going on or give permission to take, because it's just like, hey, what songs do you like? But they said they have a few songs that were higher indicators, but they didn't want to release those names just in case they want to use them in further tests and not spoil the potential tests.
I mean, I'm almost wondering, though, does the music really, you know, matter at all? I mean, is it just that, hey, there's a higher percentage of sociopaths out there that, you know, we, you know, fail to realize, and music has absolutely nothing to do with it?
Probably. It's like, no, those songs are really popular, so a lot of people are going to like those, also psychopaths.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. So, I mean, I don't know.
They also said, you know, some of the songs that scored the lowest was My Sharona and that song Titanium. But then again, I ain't listening to that crap anyway, so It may just be the fact that no one's listening to that.
It may just be that it's a bad song.
Yes. Oh.
I don't know. I'm always, you know, coming from a heavy metal, violent video game background, I mean, I'm sure I fit probably every... Yep, you would have, you know, psychopathic tendencies or whatever the case is. But, I mean, does any of that have to do with anything? Maybe I'm just a, you know...
Yeah, I listen to a lot of metal and rap, and I promise there's no bodies buried in my basement. I don't even have a basement, so we're good. Oh.
Get in your hole.
But another thing a lot of us metalheads have are tattoos. And researchers at...
But those are popular now, too.
Yeah. It used to be like, you know, you were hardcore, you get your tattoos. Now it's like everyone has tattoos. Even like, you know, the... Yeah, I got a butterfly. Yeah, it says hope in Chinese or something. Yeah, it's like everyone's getting tattoos nowadays.
Over in China, do they get like, you know, bad English phrases on their arms?
That would be amazing. I want to look into that. That sounds hilarious.
I mean, just see a Chinese person with, you know, the word water tattooed on them or something. I mean,
yes. It says courage. No, dude, it says hot dog. But anyway, now they're making smart tattoos. Smart ink, developed by Harvard Medical School.
Does this erase your bad tattoo decision?
No, this one actually is kind of a monitor of the body. Developed by Harvard Medical School and MIT Media Lab. They basically come up with this ink that, you know, doesn't require any kind of circuitry or anything, but will change colors based on whether or not a certain biomarker is present. So one of them they have is ink that will change color if, you know, sugar levels are too high. You know, if it takes a lot of glucose in them. So people who are diabetic and have to, you know, take constant blood tests, you know, can use this ink in a tattoo and be like, oh, my, you know, SpongeBob tattoo is changing colors. I need to take my insulin. Or
I need more pineapple.
And they have another one, too, that detects, basically tells you if you're dehydrated or not. The color gets more intense under blue light when certain, you know, indicators of dehydration are present. So it has the potential, you know, for people that need to monitor things in their body, you know, so a natural way that they,
like,
can,
you know,
visually detect those without having to, like, you know, draw blood or take any kind of weird tests.
I almost see this as like a way to evolving that, you know, you give birth to a child or whatever, and that's like the first step. Like, okay, let's go ahead and put on, you know, the health monitor ink and, you know, I mean, there you go.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've seen a couple like sci-fi movies where people were marked with some kind of thing where it's like, oh, you know, people with the blue have to mate with the people that also have the blue because, you know, the genetics are proven matches. And if your shit turns purple, that means you're corrupted and you must be executed. I mean, this has the bit, you know, I can see where it has good medical benefits, but there's also several bad sci-fi movies based on the same principle.
And you see, that, my friend, is what may make you a psychopath. Has nothing to do with the music. You're just fucked up in the head.
Ah, true enough.
Are the ink on your arm?
Oh, shit. It's changing color. It means I'm a psychopath. another thing, you know, we haven't done a science article in a while, so we've got to talk about our pending robot uprising. Google's DeepMind, who is basically the think tank that oversees...
Was this the AI that became self-aware?
No, okay. DeepMind is a group of people who study artificial intelligence and its impact on the world. And they have recently announced the creation of the Ethics and Society Research Team. Basically, it's going to be their anti-Skynet team, where they are trying to develop rules of ethics for AI.
So they've already realized that Skynet is an absolute threat. So, you know, now let's invent a robot to counteract the effect. But, you know, once all the robots figure out that humans are just shit in general, you know, they're going to side together. It's us versus them, and we get Terminator or what? Terminator 2000. It'll be like Terminator 5000 by then.
Yeah, I mean, basically their main goal is to, like I said, they've already decided that AI has huge potential and will definitely be an impact on the world in general. So that they
they're
want to
be given us smart tattoos.
Yeah. So they're wanting to, like, you know, basically people who are developing AI to instill some kind of rules of ethics so they don't create a Skynet, or, you know, and, you know, try to recreate things that will only benefit mankind. And on the other spectrum, they want to try to prepare the general public for the eventual inclusion of AI. So, you know, so we're not so shocked when, you know, all of a sudden, you know, our toaster starts talking to us. We don't shoot it because it's a Decepticon. You know, they want to try to educate people on how best to deal with our future robot overloads.
So we program the robots to say, hey, humans are good. But the artificial intelligence says, no, humans are bad. Like, that's just...
Well, humans have already had a bad track record with dealing with artificial intelligence. I mean, whatever, Hitchpot got beat to death in Boston last year. And I saw another article where, you know...
Were they listening to Blackstreet?
It might have been. But then I saw another article where a company that's developing these future sex robots that have, like, AI and stuff was... had one on display at some tech convention, and basically everyone started groping it and ended up breaking it and pretty much destroyed the entire system. So I'm like, we don't really have a good, you know, track record with dealing with non-human electronic entities.
Yeah, we're supposed to program the ethics.
Yeah. I could see where this could go horribly, horribly wrong when, like, the most unethical people are expected to program ethics into machines. Yeah.
Fractured but whole. Yes, it's not often I make you speechless.
Then with that, we'll be right back.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News.
Yeah, news.
So up this week, we got a look at the official Black Panther trailer. So, you know, this is going to debut February 16th, 2018, I believe. And I got to say, it's looking pretty awesome. You know, with all of the, you know, Marvel stuff, you know, we knew it was going to release in phases. So, you know, just seeing, you know, a lot of these characters that we have not, you know, seen outside of the comic books, you know, coming to life and everything else, you know, it's just getting more and more awesome.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the Black Panther trailer looks, I mean, he was pretty badass in Civil War. You know, now that he's like, you know, turn loose on his own, it looks freaking awesome. And, you know, we get our first, like, you know, real looks at Wakanda, who's, you know, supposed to be like a super high tech country, you know, mixed with, you know, traditional, you know, African tribal type stuff. It looks like an awesome mix of, they've got like freaking, you know, jets that, you know, look more badass than the shield freaking Quinjets.
Yes.
and you know, you know, trains and, you know, all kind of gadgets. I mean, he's basically like, you know, and the Iron Man of his country. And, you know, as Tony has had problems with people stealing his technology, it looks like people are trying to steal his technology too.
Yeah, and I mean, that's such a awesome contrast between, you know, traditional versus, you know, the futuristic and everything else. And I mean, it just really works with this film, you know, just in the couple of minutes that we've seen. So
yeah, I love that dynamic of people with spears next to laser guns and spaceships, essentially. It's just a cool dynamic. And, you know, the only thing that's kind of missing from the trailer is, you know, as we know from the end of Civil War, you know, Captain America and, you know, the Winter Soldier was hiding out in Wakanda at one point. So don't know if we're going to get a, you know, cameo from them or a post-credits reveal, because this is the, whatever, next to the last movie before we got like what do we have one more before Infinity War?
I know we've got this. We've got Ragnarok, I believe, right?
Or yeah, Ragnarok's that... fixing to come out first of November 3rd or something. So yeah, this is post credits of this will probably have to start pointing things toward Infinity War because this is our last movie before Infinity War hits. So yeah, they're gonna have to start trying to pull everybody back together for the next movie. So, or they may skip it entirely and do like we had with the end of the first Captain America, where he's got like a Avengers trailer.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot of storylines out there that's going to have to be, drawn back together in the next two movies.
Yeah. I'm not quite sure, at what point, it all comes together, but I mean, there's just so many superhero movies and everything now that it's just freaking awesome. I mean,
speaking of Panthers, I swear the scene of the giant Panther statue castle just like gave me flashbacks to Thundercats. I'm like, is this a live action Thundercats? Because that looks a whole lot like the the castle from Thundercats.
Man, if done correctly, that would be I would get behind that.
Freaking like, live action Thundercats, that'd be badass. I mean, we have the technology to pull that stuff off now. I mean, because like as high tech and stuff as this looks, I mean, it's something to think about.
Up next is,
Disney probably owns that too, so I mean, might as well. Yeah, they own everything at this point.
The big conglomerate. So we did get a second official trailer for Marvel's The Punisher Netflix series. And
yeah, this one less of a Metallica commercial, but still some Metallica mixed in there just for good measure.
Well, the first one I think was there just to, put the high energy, explosion, everything else. I with this trailer here, it seems, slightly more toned down where you're starting to see, I think, the darker inner workings of the Punisher and where, a lot of that, rage is seated and everything. So,
yeah, where the first one was highlighting the action, this one's giving us a little more of the story, and it's going to be as dark as you expect from a Netflix Marvel movie or TV show. And we finally got a release date. With our last trailer, it was still up in the air of when this was going to be coming out. But now we know November 17th is the day for Punisher, which I think we're going to be at the Atlanta Steampunk Expo that weekend. So I know what I'm doing Sunday night when I get home is marathoning the Punisher.
Yeah.
I got to go home early Friday so I can watch Punisher before I go to the con.
I've been up all weekend. Be streaming the Punisher like.
In the friggin' hotel room after the party watching the Punisher. November's going to be a good movie for nerddom. So we got, Justice League, Thor. We've got Punisher coming out. Our weekends are going to be busy as nerds go.
Yeah, it's getting hard to keep up. Like, I mean, this whole resurgence, it's awesome on one aspect. Another one is like, I can't put real life on hold. So, the struggle's becoming real.
Yeah.
Talking about something else that's becoming real.
Shit just got real.
We didn't talk about it on the last episode of the podcast because we recorded on a Sunday. The trailer didn't release until Monday. So, Star Wars The Last Jedi trailer. I'm sure everybody listening to the podcast has probably seen this thing multiple times now.
The Last Jedi trailer.
Yeah.
Oh, but yeah, it just looks too much like Empire Strikes Back to me. I'm afraid.
Yeah,
the first one was a New Hope rehash. This is starting
I am kind of curious though, as far as, is this trailer just one big misdirection? I mean, when a director comes out and says, hey, pay no attention to this trailer that, the way this thing was edited in no way, fits the film dynamic. Now, is that just the editor trying to, or director trying to save face? Because, you know, there were a lot of comments that, holy crap, Luke's a bitch. Like, yeah. You know, and we got Kylo and Rey, who is just emo. And, oh, look at there. We have another cutesy character, yeah. You know.
Hey, look, we have
porgs.
We have walkers attacking a secret rebel base where they have to use glider things to fight them off. I mean, it just screams Empire Strikes Back to me.
So
fucking Finn's gonna end up in carbonite by the end of the movie. Mark my words.
But we're all brother sister cousins.
Yeah. But it's Star Wars. You can't not see it. Yeah. You know? But it's. The trailer has not given me high hopes, but the one thing that was the highlight of it that I kind of complained about with the Force Awakens was there's no epic space battles. This one gave us some epic space battles in the trailer. You know, they looked pretty badass, so I'm like, it looks a little more Star Wars-y than the last movie.
Well, I mean, and I think that's one of the reasons. I mean. It's Star Wars. I get it, you know, to your point. You know, but at the same time, like, you know, throughout the books and everything else, there's so many characters and so many cool dynamics that, you know, where so many of these films just focus on the same three people, you know, and it's like, come on. I mean, there's so much universe out there to play with and play around in. And I mean, I think that's one of the reasons I enjoyed Rogue One so much. But,
yeah, I'm finding myself more excited about the one-offs than I am the legacy movies. It's just, but again, you know, at least Luke spoke in this trailer. It's more than we got out of the last movie.
It's like, oh, you've been on an island all this time, huh?
How's it going, Yoda stand-in?
Just chilling. And up next is. Tom Selleck's epic mustache looks like it's getting a reboot.
Woohoo!
So that means Magnum PI reboot series is in the works.
Oh, yeah. Time to break out my Hawaiian shirt.
Yes. Wear it with style, my friend.
Yeah. So they've announced a reboot in the works, and it's by the guy who did the reboot of Hawaii Five-0, which I've not followed it closely, but what episodes I've seen on it looks pretty badass. So... You know, it's got a good pedigree behind it because, like I said, this guy's made a turned Hawaii Five-0 into a pretty badass show. So, and he's used to doing stuff in Hawaii by now because between working on Lost and this, and now dude's like, I'm just gonna keep making shows where I don't have to ever leave Hawaii, which is a pretty good plan.
Absolutely. So, no real details, as of yet.
I'm just hoping they bring Lestache back.
I mean, what about the Detroit Tigers? I mean,
yeah,
that's such an iconic cap, for the character. So I
saw a pretty epic Magnum PI cosplay at Dragon Con this year. So, yeah, if
secretly it wasn't cosplay, it was advertising.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it was spot on. I mean,
yeah, so it's, I'm excited. I'll check it out when it comes on, see if it's worth making in the DVR list.
Up next is Star Trek Discovery. Apparently, it has now been renewed for a second season at CBS All Access.
Yeah, that show I've not seen yet.
Yeah. The reviews and stuff that I keep reading is either people love it or they hate it.
Yeah, so it's... And then again, like I said, it's on a subscription network that I'm not... There's no reason for me to join, so... It comes out on video. I may see it when it eventually makes it to DVD where I can, give it a rent or something. But yeah, it's... I have followed every other Star Trek show that has come out, but this one I've just not been super excited to get my hands on.
So, next is we're going to flip over to some video game news. So, we talked about the open beta for, Star Wars Battlefront 2. Amazing gameplay. I'll go ahead and say that, visually, playability wise, I mean, the game is a solid. What is not such a solid is this trend to put random generating loot crates and microtransactions in $60+ video games.
Yes, that is fucking pissed me. Like, I saw a meme today and it was like cheat codes back in the day, and it was somebody like with a sheet of all these little codes written down, typing it in, and it was like cheat codes today, and it was a guy swiping his credit card. I mean, it's sad but true at this point.
So, you know, the reason that we're talking about this is in 2015, Activision had, you know, apparently applied for a patent that, you know, would allow them to, you know, come up with a software that would basically pit, you know, a junior player against a marquee player. So somebody that had spent, you know, actual money on, you know, better gear, better weapons, that type of thing, aka loot boxes, you know, to entice that player to then purchase those same items from that character that they're getting killed over and over again by. You know, and it just so happened that I think it was October 15th, the patent had been approved. So, you know, what we are potentially going to see is gaming is no longer about being skilled at a game. It's about swiping and, you know, play to win, you know, and, you know, just, you know, what makes it even worse is, you know, the fact that, you know, the software is basically going to control every dynamic and say, oh, well, now that you've made this purchase, now we're going to pit you against lesser players. So it's going to make it seem like that purchase improved your gameplay experience. So you'll be compelled to spend more money.
Yeah, EA is the freaking empire. I mean, they are the evil in the game.
Well, I mean, you know,
but unfortunately, they keep making games that you want to play. Like, you want to play Star Wars.
Well, you know, the problem with it is so many people now have gotten comfortable with the idea of pre-ordering. So developers and these major game studios, you know, now don't even come out with complete games.
No.
So, you know, it's I'm going to release a half-ass game, but then I'm going to charge you for the season pass or this DLC content, and consumers do exactly what consumers do and keep consuming, and, you know, now we've degraded the gaming industry so much that, you know, it's no longer skill or there's no balance, and, you know, I think we've, you know, hit a pivotal turning point to where there's no going back.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't even have that much of a problem with the DLC when it's a vast improvement, but where they're having to make it where you have to have the DLC to be able to play the game competitively. You know, if it was like back in the day when we're like, all right, you've beat the game, here's a whole nother story or a, you know, new map packs or whatever that, you know, added some more playability to the game. But this whole, like, just trying to screw you out of your money deal that they're doing, this is...
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, it's...
And I'm not a big online game player anyway, because I, yeah, have
but I mean, you know, so, I mean, that's the problem, though, is...
Single-player mode.
You know, so many games now are doing away with that single-player aspect, you know, or, you know, they're doing away with campaigns, you know. I mean, that was, you know, a big highlight for, you know, Battlefront 2 coming out was, oh, sweet, there's finally, you know, single-player... you know, a campaign mode again, you know, where, you know, the first Battlefront didn't have that. You just got thrown into battle and, you know, picked up the story from wherever you were.
So screw this. I'm going to go back to my Nintendo 64, my Super Nintendo, and you damn kids get off my lawn.
Yeah, so does everybody else when they keep, you know, forking over $300 for these, quote, classic, you know, systems and stuff. But, you know, a bit of my rant, a bit of my tirade, you know. What the hell do I know?
And they wonder why piracy has become such a big thing. It's because, you know, you've screwed people out of as much money as, you know, people are sick about it.
I mean, apparently not, though. I mean, I looked at some statistics, and, you know, I think it was in 2014, maybe 2015, EA made something like $3.3 billion on, or no, I think it was like $1.5 billion on microtransactions. In 2016, that number had jumped to like $4.6 billion.
I want the old.
So I mean, you know, it's people doing it to themselves, or it's, you know, just that consumers being consumers, or parents, you know, buying AAA, you know, game titles and just giving little Timmy, you know, their credit card number and say, here, have at it, and then bitching when they get hit with $1,000 credit card bill.
I'm getting too old for the shit rigs.
Yep. So I digress. You make the choice.
All right. So with that, check us out on CigarNerdPodcast.com. We're also on the ESO Network at ESOPodcast.com. Be sure and download us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you find podcasts. And go on iTunes, leave us a review so more people see the shenanigans we're into. Also, if we had the interview earlier, if you want to go to Atlanta Steampunk Expo, it's AtlantaSteampunkExpo.com. You can buy your cool Cigar Nerd shirts at our Zazzle store, CigarNerds.com, or Zazzle.com/CigarNerds, and RealMenSmokeCigars.com for your Cigar Nerd smoking shirts. Check out StrikeForceEnergy.com for your energy drink needs. We're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, at Cigar Nerd Pod. And with that, we're just having a doozy of a day, officers. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.